This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. It is November 5th, 2014, and I welcome you to our show. We hope that you think of this show, Invest Talk, as a source of answers and information, and with some perspective as well, you know, about some of what's going on. History plays such an important role in making investing decisions. What is the historical context of today's market? For instance, we now know we have a Republican Senate and a Republican House and a Democratic president. Historically, what does that mean for the stock market? That's happened, I think, 21 times since 1930. What does that mean for stocks? Some of those 21 times, what happened? Stuff like that, historical data, I'll share that with you. Then we get into issues of personal life situations, each person's sense about investing, about the risk that they want to take, how much risk they want to see in their portfolio, in their life. Every person is different. And it's not just about age either. Traditionally, your equity exposure goes down as you get older and your bond exposure goes up. Traditionally, well, that tradition is being turned on its ear these days. The problem with this rule of thumb is that everyone had different levels of risk tolerance. No one, you know, that rule of thumb of, you know, you should have about your age, the number of percentage of bonds depending on your age. If you're 60, have 60% in bonds. If you're 70, have 70%. Well, you know, it depends on your retirement goals and if you're still working and the interest rate environment that you're in. There's too many things, and that rule's just, I mean, it's a decent rule of thumb, but not something that everybody should be doing. So, and not every 50-year-old or older is comfortable with the volatility that you see in the market these days. You see how market is just spiking up and down? It's just pretty, the market went down 10% in about, 4 weeks? Recoup that 10% in 2 weeks. By the way, that usually just the opposite. It goes down faster than it goes up. Not this time. That's volatility for you. Very unusual volatility. So when you reach 65, or retirement age, whenever that is, have you saved enough? Do you need to invest? Do you need to take more risks? You still need to keep working? Keep working? Everyone has a different picture. So when I speak to the clients, I talk about these kinds of things and what their goal is, their plans, their financial situation. Everybody's different. And you'd be amazed. As I talk to people, everybody is not the same. They do different things. So what's on your mind? What kind of question do you want to talk about financially? 888-99-CHARGE, how you reach us by phone whenever you want to, whenever you listen to us, if you listen to us on a podcast or listen to us live on investtalk.com, 4 to 5 on the radio, or, you know, on the web, whichever. But let's go ahead and talk, pick up the phone. Here's the first question of the day in our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHARGE.
My name is John. I'm from Mission Viejo, and I listen to your show on the podcast, and I enjoy listening to you every day. And what I would like to know, I'm a 55-year-old man, and I rolled over my IRA into a Scott trade. I'm wondering what percentages should I put in, I'm thinking about putting in ETFs and maybe mutuals. What percentage of each stock and what position should I put them in? And also, you always mention on stocks that don't put more than 3% in each position. But for a mutual or an ETF, what percentage of each one would you put in? Thank you, and hopefully I'll hear you on the radio. Bye.
Okay, since an ETF or a mutual fund is a holder of a number of stocks, it's already diversified, that 3% rule doesn't really apply. The 3% rule that we like to use is we like to buy 3% of an individual equity, a stock, you know, and therefore, you know, we then spread the risk out because you'd have 33 positions, you were fully invested, right? But when you buy an ETF or a mutual fund, you know, they're already diversified. So I can tell you what we generally do. We usually buy between 8 and 15% in any one mutual fund or ETF, if that's what your portfolio is going to be full of, and you try to pick different parts of the market with these ETFs or mutual funds: large cap, mid cap, small cap, growth, value, international. You depending on how much risk you want to take in what space in the market. But 8 to 15%, somewhere in that range of any one ETF or mutual fund, that would be my suggestion. So if you want to do 10%, that's just to make it simple, that's fine. But then when you buy another ETF or mutual fund, make sure it's not the same. You don't want two large cap ETFs, large cap growth ETFs. Why? Why buy two? Well, it's a reason. You could, simply because you want a different manager. That's a possibility. But ETFs usually are indexes, it doesn't make sense. If you're buying a mutual fund, it makes more sense because they have different managers and maybe they have different performance. But usually you want to buy different parts of the market. Different parts. And buy, 5-10 different parts of the market. You're not going to be wrong all the time if all of a sudden small caps take a dive, but maybe big caps don't. You can look at the market today. The bigger companies are doing better than the smaller companies right now in our indexes. So, that's why you'd want to spread it around. Many times in a bull market, the smaller companies do a lot better than the bigger companies, but not this time. Kind of unusual. Some say investors hold too much in stocks and bonds and need to jack up alternative allocations. What are alternative allocations? So maybe stocks and bonds are not enough. Let's talk. It's going to be one of our talking points. Let's talk about alternative allocations of different types of investments. We'll go over some of those. So that's going to be one of our talking points today. I also want to discuss jobs. ADP report came out today. That's the private sector job report, the unofficial number. The official number comes out usually a couple days after this one, so like on Friday. So what did that say? And have you noticed retailers are gearing up for the holidays? Did you notice that they're gearing up a lot more than they have in the past? Talk about that. And will your siblings help you with your parents? This is a big problem, and I have personal experience with this right now about trying to help an elder parent and having different siblings having different ideas. So I'm going to have some suggestions for you how to resolve that. And here's what I also want to talk about: some earnings coming out for different stocks. Earnings season is just about over. More than 60% of the companies in the S&P have reported. Do you know how many of them, probably closer to 70% by today, how many of that, what percentage of those people have beat their expectations of earnings? We're going to talk about that. I think those are kind of interesting facts. And what's really fascinating, some of the bigger tech companies are not doing so good. They're the ones that are being disappointing. Maybe that's why the tech index is not doing better than the big cap blue chip index. Maybe that's why. Okay, what happened to the market today? Market was mixed, believe it or not, even with the Dow up 101 points. You wouldn't think the market would be mixed, but the Dow was up 101 points, but the Nasdaq was down 3. And the S&P was up 12. That's a mixed market. More bullish, more of a bull market than a bearish market, but it certainly was a mixed market. What really is very interesting going on out there, junk bonds are falling again. Junk bonds are falling again, and the dollar keeps moving up. Dollar keeps moving up, junk bonds are falling. Why is that? That's kind of an interesting dichotomy going there. Because you would think if the dollar was going up, that would attract more foreigners to our bond market, and it has, but not the junk bond market. The treasuries, the high quality, yes, but not the junk bond market. Matter of fact, everybody's avoiding the junk bond market. Even the normal bonds outside of treasuries, they're not doing that great. They're not as high as they were. You would think they would be, because the dollar's going up. It's pretty strong. Why wouldn't foreigners be buying, using their weaker currency, buying our currency, our stronger currency, and get the yield. So I find that interesting. It seems to be something is different there. Different. Just pointing it out. Not sure why. That's what we're going to discuss. Whatever is on your mind is first, though. Everyone is welcome, from beginner to experienced investors. We welcome any money questions during this hour and beyond. The 24-hour listener line is always open. Many of the podcast subscribers take advantage of that. You can also follow us on Twitter and send a message that way, at InvestTalk. That's at InvestTalk with two T's. That's our address. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is InvestTalk.
This is InvestTalk. Just starting your investment journey? We're here for you. Give Steve a call now with your questions at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So, stocks. Should you do something else besides stocks and bonds? There's a big move toward all alternative investments, which are much easier to buy these days. Before, it was very difficult to get into alternative investments, but not anymore with the advent of ETFs, exchange-traded funds. It's becoming more and more popular. And the biggest alternative investment category is commodities. Commodities. The biggest investment, 50% of the respondents said they were looking for alternative investments in a recent survey by Mainstay. And of those, 48% were holding non-traditional investments, said commodities like oil, foodstuffs, and metals were part of that portfolio. So a big part of that, and gold is part of that as well, even though gold's not done very good this year. Didn't do very good last year, and not doing very good this year because the dollar's strong. Then the next most popular alternative investment is private equity. Those are like hedge funds, and that's 40%. Now the problem with historically private equity is very difficult to get into. You had to be ultra rich. You had to have, you know, take a huge amount of risk. And all these alternative investments are not less risky. But the theory is, if you invest in a variety of these alternative investments, maybe you can spread your risk. But some of the alternative investments are riskier in and of themselves. But another category of alternative risk, which is less risky, is the 70-30 funds. Have you heard those funds? Those are funds that are 30% short and 70% long. So the market goes down, that 30% works really, really well. Market goes up, at least the 70% you have will go up. That's the idea of those alternative investments called the 70-30 funds. You know, short and long funds. And short meaning that part of when you have a short, meaning that if whatever it's tracking or the individual short of stock, if it goes down, the value of the short goes up in exact opposite. So it's a good way to hedge your portfolio. Creating a realistic retirement budget, investing and managing your money wisely to ensure it lasts as long as you need it. Do you need help with that? We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk. Looking ahead now to our next podcast, possibly the greatest illusion we have is that denial protects us. Being asleep is what can hurt us. Why stock market crashes happen? That's our talking point for Thursday, November 6th. We hope you'll be here to listen to that. In the meantime, why not use our free risk analysis tool to help you determine your true risk tolerance level? It's there for you on InvestTalk.com. We continue now with Invest Talk. You're invited to bring any money question to Steve right now at 888-99-CHART.
We're here for you, beginner or experienced investor, doesn't matter. 888-99-CHART is our number. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program time, you can always call between 4 and 5 Pacific time or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just leave your question like Diane did in San Mateo.
Hi. I would like to know what you folks think of the stock symbol RIG, which is Transocean Oil Exploration. I very much appreciate hearing what your opinion is of that stock. Okay, thank you.
Well, about a month or month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago, I don't remember exactly, we finally got out of Rig after it broke down. Rig is a very good company. It provides offshore contract drilling for oil and gas. The problem is the pressure on oil prices downward, meaning that the future is probably looking kind of dim for the drillers. And so when they downgraded their sales and earnings for 2015, it was time to leave Rig. Now, Rig is going to make $4.63 this year, but next year it's going to make $2.68. It's a very good company, but it's a company that you don't want to buy when oil prices are heading down, and that's what we're seeing. The dollar moving up, oil prices down, all commodities down in price because the dollar's getting stronger, and therefore, you know, it's not the time to buy these kinds of stocks. It's not the time to buy. Now, is it cheap? Heck yeah. I mean, the P.E. ratio is 5. But that's a P.E. ratio when it's making $4 a share, not when it's going to make $2.68. At $2.68, the P.E. is closer to 10. Still not expensive, but, well, that could be expensive if sales and profits keep going down. They've got to turn those things around, and that's not going to happen unless oil prices or the stock, the price of a barrel of oil goes up, because big companies will stop drilling if they can't make profits on the oil that they're drilling for. So you're always looking forward to the next earnings, and you know, I'd probably stay away from this until it starts to recover. Looks like it's trying to find a bottom for the last month or so. It's been chattering around a bottom, but until it starts back up and oil prices start to firm, I think it's time to leave this sector alone. That's Rig, R-I-G, R-I-G. I'm going to talk about a pretty sensitive topic here. And that's, it's about getting family members to help you with your parents. Okay? Siblings, brothers and sisters, don't always agree. There's a problem as the baby boomers get older. That means your parents of the baby boomers are getting older. And then you have to take care of your parents one way, shape, or another. Now, the issues are is that there's like sibling rivalry going on, and you gotta be willing to understand what's happening, and you may have to take on, you meaning one of the siblings, may have to take on the responsibility as opposed to other members helping. Now, I have this problem right now, not with my parents, but my wife's parent, living parent. And some of the things that, if you're on the other side of that, you're the elder and you have children and you're getting in your 80s, you can help with this. One way you can really help is specifically state your wants and needs. For instance, if something happens to you and you can't make decisions, which one of your child do you want to have power of attorney both medically and financially over your assets? State it, write it down, make it clear, let everybody know. Clearly give the authority to some, not also, don't do this, don't have co-agents, co-authority. That makes no sense, because that means they're just both going to argue about what needs to be done. One. Pick one. Okay? And talk about it. Adult parents talk about it with the children. Now, the big issue you have is your parents think that they are perfect. Your older elders think that they are perfectly capable of taking care of themselves. Even when they're 85, 90, 95, 100, they don't need help. Well, we all know that that's not true. At some point, many of them do. Now, of course, there are those that don't. And one of the big issues is the parent. You got to approach your parents carefully about this, because you know you don't want to dictate to them, and you can't dictate to them. They're adults. The only way you can dictate to them is if you take them to court and find, and have them medically deemed incompetent. Is that where you want to go? Is that the route you want to take? So you got to start talking to your parents and plant seeds. You know, maybe you shouldn't be driving anymore. Maybe you're at that age where, you know, it's time to, you know, think about, you know, not driving. And oh boy, that would be tough in Southern California, tough in almost every part of the United States. But that conversation has to be had. And you don't have to do it all at one time. Right now we're having a conversation with our elder parent about moving to a smaller place. You're going to have that conversation, moving to a smaller place. Because, you know, the bigger places, you can't take care of it anymore. Or it's got steps, and you got fall-down hazards. Trust me, I am fully aware of these problems because we're dealing with it right now. I'm 62, my wife is 659, and we have an 88-year-old parent. What money matter do you need to know more about? What about insurance? You started my career in insurance many, many moons ago. How much do you really need, and what kind? There's a lot to talk about. Get online with us at 888-99-CHART.
This is the Wednesday, November 5th edition of Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. Possibly the greatest illusion we have is that denial protects us. Being asleep is what can hurt us. Why stock market crashes happen. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. And join us right now at 888-99-CHART with your question for Steve.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about the jobs report that came out today. Not the official jobs report. That comes out on Friday. I'm talking about the ADP, private sector jobs report. And it was came in for October, and they say they're going to have 230,000 new jobs, slightly up from September. That's we've been increasing jobs about 200,000 per month for the last 6 months. That's not great. That's not bad either. And if you keep doing it over and over and over and over for months and months and months, it'll eventually soak up all the excess labor pool that we have. And that's really what we want. We would prefer to have more jobs, but you know what? You take what you can get. It's not bad at all. And just so you know, kind of a breakdown, 181,000 of those 230 were in the service sector. And that's normal because we are a service economy. 48,000 were in the manufacturing sector. But what was the most interesting stat, and is kind of always true, and this is what really irritates me about politicians, when they're attacking big companies and stuff, like that's the problem or the engine of our economy. They're not the problem or the engine. The engine and any problems in our economy will come from the small and medium-sized companies. Because all but 5,000 of these jobs came from small and medium-sized companies. They're the ones that we need to coddle politically. The small company guys, the medium-sized guys, they're the ones that hire most of the people in this country. And, you know, those are the ones that no one pays attention to. Everybody pays attention to the big companies, the Walmarts and, you know, the big companies, Apple, Microsoft, and, you know, Home Depot. These are big, huge companies. They're not the hirers of our workers in this country. It's the small and medium-sized companies. So when the economy tries to help, you know, when our politicians try to help our economy, really what you should focus on, and the Federal Reserve should focus on that part of the economy, the small companies. Give them the benefits as much as you can, because they're the ones that are going to do the hiring. But that's not how it works, is it? It's the ones who give the most political contributions. That's where it comes from. No, and that's from big companies. It's just too bad how our focus is not on the right place, in my mind. I mean, of course, everybody has a different opinion about this, but I think you can't have an opinion about where the jobs are grown. It's a fact, small and mid-sized companies. That's where it is. And I think we need to concentrate more on that part of our economy. That's all I'm saying. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program. If you'd like to join them, you can subscribe for free on iTunes. If you have a question for us, just ask. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Matt. I listen to you guys out on podcasts in Chicago. I was wondering, with all the volatility in Europe, if there's a good ETF that essentially shorts the euro. I don't know anything about buying and selling currency, so I was hoping to just buy an ETF. That sounds simpler. Any thoughts on that would be much appreciated. Thank you. Bye.
You know, I don't know if there is an ETF that shorts the euro, but it would not surprise me if there wasn't one out there. I just don't know it. I know there is ETF that shorts the European economies and the stocks, but I don't know specifically about the currency that shorts the currency, because obviously their currency is not doing well, and they're probably going to try to start some QE kind of thing or more, because their economy is falling into the third recession in 6 years. So, you know, that's not a bad thought process, but of course, you know, you're not the first one to think of that also, but I just don't know what it is. But I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't one. That would not surprise me. Okay, let's talk about InvestTalk 101. Let's just have another lesson. Up or down? Up or down? Let's see how you do with this quiz. Experienced investors will know this right off, but let's see how the beginners do. In general, investments that are riskier tend to provide higher returns over time than investments with less risk. True or false? Investments that are riskier tend to provide higher returns over time than investments with less risk. Is that true or false? Now, the answer seems kind of intuitive, but there are some folks who feel disappointed when their big blue chip stocks don't grow much. The answer is true. The riskier stocks tend to provide higher returns over time. Now, over the long term, everybody, remember long term, the stock and bond markets tend to reward risk-taking. It's the risk-reward trade-off. How much risk, how much reward do you want? If you want more steady, more predictable, you buy the less risky blue-chip stock. Now, over the short term, high-risk investments, small company stocks, can be extremely volatile. And when I say volatile, you can interpret that to mean that it can go down very, very fast. And it's very, very painful. But also they can go up very, very fast. Now it's depending on how much risk are you willing to take, how much risk are you comfortable with. And can you take the punishment when they go down very, very fast? Because you got to be able to take it, ride it, and get through it. And then actually invest while it's happening. It's very difficult to do. Now, if you want to manage the risk, there's a way to manage that risk. You got to learn that, how to manage that high volatility risk. And that's InvestTalk 101. Thanks to our friends at the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority for producing this quiz. Is there a topic you want to know more about? Get in touch. We're right here at 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note. Click on the Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com.
The typical 401k offers subpar investment plan designs and very marginal investment options, too. If you'd like to explore something better, go to InvestTalk.com and click on Contact Justin, and on the message, just write 401k. You'll get some useful information in return that you can share with your employer. Now we continue with the Q&A on InvestTalk.
Hi, Steve. This is Bob from San Diego. I listened to your show on the podcast. My question is, if you have an index fund, like an S&P 500 index fund, and the S&P 500 has gone up significantly, let's say, you know, 20%, would you sell any portion of that? Thank you very much. I listen to your show, and I like it a lot. Thanks. Bye for now.
Now, just because an index fund goes up a certain percentage, that does not is not really a reason to sell. It's not. There's no reason to sell an index fund that's gone up sharply, or to go the one that has gone down sharply. The reason to sell are because you need to diversify. You need to you're too heavy. Maybe it went up 20%, and now you need to rebalance it because you got too much of any one thing. That's very dangerous to have too much of any one thing, one sector, one. If the index is tracking the S&P 500, that's a pretty broad index, so it's not. You can have more of that, but if it's an index fund following the oil services index, which there is one, then that's very specific. And therefore, if that goes up 20%, you might want to hedge yourself away from that a little bit. You may want to rebalance that because you're in a very narrow part of the market. But a broader index, just because it got up, there's not a reason to sell. There's none. Okay, now, if you step back a little bit and you say, well, I know we're moving into a recession. It looks like recession's getting coming and we're getting deeper in a recession. Therefore, you might want to cut back on something. Be more defensive. But that's a matter of managing risk, not just selling something because it's gone up. There's a big difference there. Okay? So just remember that. Now, have you noticed some of the big blue chip stocks haven't done very well, even with the earnings? Now, the earnings have done overall, Earth's earnings season that's ending, pretty much right now or in the next week or so, has been very good. Over 60% of the companies that reported in the S&P 500 have beat their Wall Street expectations. Okay, and that's probably one of the reasons why the 10% correction, it was just about 10% exactly of the S&P 500 that happened in September and into October, recouped, because by the second week of October, all of a sudden these earnings were starting to come in and they're very strong and the market went straight up from there. So, but there are some notable misses. Netflix. They had a dollar. They increased their price $1 a month for their popular subscriber growth, and that the subscriber subscription, their offering, and that really hurt their growth. And that came in, the stock fell 19%. Worst trading day in 2 years. Amazon. Looks like the investors in Amazon have been very forgiving for many, many years, but now they're getting a little tired of it, and they had a big quarterly loss, Amazon, and the stock took a hit because of it. Facebook, their shares went down 6% on 100 million trading volume in one day because costs were sharply higher. Twitter. Earnings met analyst expectations, and revenue growth was strong, but fewer new users joined in the first and second quarter. Stock fell 10%. Now, not all of them are bad, but there were some notable big companies that didn't do well. Just thought that was kind of interesting. Don't think just because you have a big name and it's very popular and everybody likes it, everything's hunky-dory. No. It always boils down to earnings. What are the earnings of the company? Okay? You drive the discussion with your questions. We want to help fill in the blanks. You can reach us anytime. Your question pops in your head, 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime.
Hey, Steve. This is Oscar. Just want to say thanks for your program. Wondering what you think of Capital One Financial Corp. That's COF. So let me know what you think, and would you be buying it? Thanks. I'm thinking about buying it right now. Don't own it. So thank you.
Well, I had a decent down day, down 1% today when the market was up 100 points for the Dow and 12 points on the S&P, even though the Nasdaq was down 3. It provides consumer and commercial lending, credit card products, and automobile financing. This is Capital One. You've seen the commercials, I'm sure, on TV. This is the problem you have with them. Sales have been going down every quarter for the last 5 quarters. Before that, the 3 quarters before that, sales were growing. Why? Why are sales falling? Why have they been falling for 4 quarters in a row? What is wrong? Actually, 5 quarters in a row. What's happening there? What's the, What's the issues? They're going to make $7.69 next year after $7.63 this year, after $7.29 last year. So, you know, it's a, you know, they're making a goodly amount of money. So the stock is $81.60 so that PE is what, 11, 12? Not overpriced, but their five-year average, the PE has ranged from 5 to 12, so it's at the top of their range. So, and if you look at the top, it looks like it's a triple top area. In other words, the three times it's come to this top, and each time it's just a little bit below the last time. So I'd say no. I'm not comfortable with it. Return on equity is only 11%. I like it higher than that. Excuse me. Yield, dividend yield, 1.5%, kind of on the skinny side. Good company. There's nothing wrong with it. They are going to repurchase $2.5 billion of their stock. And remember, they're $46 billion company. So $2.5 billion is what, maybe 5%-ish? Which is not bad, and that will help earnings per share growth, but it won't help sales growth. So I'm curious of why the sales growth is weak. How come? What's the problem? That would be my first question. And until that sales growth, until I get that answer, I would not invest in the company. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. U.S. trade deficit surges 7.6%. Our trade deficit surged, meaning imports versus exports. We have less exports than imports. Imports, it wasn't that the imports were that much. It was that our exports fell because the dollar got strong. And that's going to shrink our GDP. I mentioned this yesterday. That's going to shrink. Remember, we had 3.5% growth in the third quarter. That's probably going to be revised down to about 3%, probably. So just be aware of that. Retailers are adding employees at record levels. Retailers, the seven largest retailers, are expecting really good holiday sales because of jobs and the economy and people, wealth effect of a moving up stock market. They expect to add 400,000 jobs, retailers, this Christmas holiday season. The holiday season, whatever you want to call it, from Thanksgiving through New Year's. 400,000 is a lot of employees to add. So I think, you know, we have to be aware of that. I mean, these are not the greatest jobs in the world, but it will put people to work, money in people's hands. And think about this, that the oil prices have come down so much that gasoline prices are coming down, and every time that gasoline price comes down, that puts more money, more discretionary money in people's pockets. It's like a tax break. That's a good thing, everybody. I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit optimistic. I am. Just a little bit. We have just a few more minutes to go, but there's a line open for you if you want to get in on us. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Any topic, as long as it's financial, we'll be happy to discuss it.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time. We continue with InvestTalk. How do you get the highest possible lifetime benefits from Social Security? Is there a better strategy for your 401k? Talk to Steve about it. Reach him right now at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Will in San Diego. How you doing, Will? Listening to us on InvestTalk.com. Appreciate it.
Pretty good, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I really do. Good. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, I'm looking at BlackRock, ticker symbol BLK, and wondering if it's a good time to get in. I know the stock has run up quite a bit.
Well, it broke out. That's one thing I like about it. It broke out against all resistance that it had back in the tops it made in September and late August. Those were a couple of double tops. And, you know, a week ago it broke above those, and it looks pretty strong. And the fundamentals look pretty strong, too. I mean, four quarters of growth, sales were growing at 9%. Well, last quarter they grew at 15%. So they're accelerating their growth. Now, you also got to remember it's BlackRock, symbol BLK, everybody. It manages fixed income, cash, equity alternatives, investment products for institutional and individual investors. So when the stock market does well, this company will do well. When the stock market doesn't do so well, this company doesn't do so well. And you can tell that by just looking at 2008 and its earnings.
Yeah. So is it fully valued at the present time?
I'm going to say no, because it's scheduled to make $20.48 next year. And its five-year P.E. range is 11 to 28. And that will mean if it stays right where it is, next year P.E. range would be about 15.
Okay.
So that's kind of on the lower end of its range, and the growth is perking up. So it kind of tells me it might be a little undervalued still, maybe worth 375, somewhere around there. And it's at 344.
Okay.
But, you know, again, I want to warn you, Will, it does well when the stock market does well. So you know, so just be aware of that. If you see a recession on the horizon, and I don't see one, I'm not saying there is one. I'm just saying that this is the kind of stock that will react to that poorly.
Right. You want to get out before that happens.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Thanks, Will.
Thank you
very much for the call. What's going on in the, you know, with the lower oil prices, okay? I mentioned this earlier this hour. With the oil price, is that good for our economy? Is that bad for the economy? And I just said that lower oil prices means it is like a tax break for everybody, because you have more discretionary money in your pocket because you're paying less at the pump. But does that mean that's good for our economy? Because if you think about it, the lower the oil price is, the one part of our economy is doing really, really good is the oil industry, especially the shale industry in the Midwest. The lower those oil prices go, the less profitable they make, the less oil they're going to find. And in the long run, don't we want more oil, not less oil? Now, the good part of this is, if I've done my homework right, it looks like the cost to get that oil out of the ground in the shale areas is like $60 a barrel. Now, that is excluding the cost of leasing the ground. But most of those areas are already leased up, and that cost has already been borne. So now we're just talking about how much profit getting them out of the ground is going to produce. And if the oil price is in the 70s, that's fine. Now, what's our oil prices? Well, they're in the high 70s right now, right? The higher 70s. So I think we don't – lower oil prices and gas prices, we want them. I want them, you want them, everybody. Anybody who buys gas, pumps the gas at the gas station, wants the lower prices. And, okay, agreed, not going to have a problem with anybody suggesting it. But there is a point where it starts to hurt us long term. When I say us, I mean the economy. And I mean you at your pocketbook. Now, OPEC meets next year. OPEC, the oil producing countries, are members of OPEC. And their costs, most of those nations' costs of pumping oil out of the ground, is $30 a barrel, $40. So OPEC can, if they drive the oil prices down, they can last quite a long time, and maybe try to squeeze some of this excess oil production out, shale production. Now, this is something I think we need to be watching. I think we need to look at it. Before we close for the hour, a reminder to register for our Wealth Workshop webinar. Wealth Workshop webinar coming up next week, November 12th, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific time. You can think of it as a retirement prep checklist. It's going to be well worth your time. I hope you can make it. You sign up by going to investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.